Chasing the Dragon Father, a Crick's podcast with lots of new toys to talk about. And with me this week, I've got...
Hello, I'm Ryan.
Hey, I'm Pat.
And I'm Anthony. We have a lot to talk about in this episode. Since last week, we got a giant pile of new and exciting Crick's toys dropped upon us. I figure we start at the top and work our way down. I just get straight into it because we got so much to talk about this week.
Sounds like a plan.
So the first big release is our new Warcaster, Mordenebra Numen of Necrogenesis. So I'll just go through her stats and then we'll see what you guys think. Mordenebra 2 is Speed 6, Mat 6, Rat 4, Defense 14, Armor 17, Command 9. Alas, this stat will be relevant later. She's got two PNS 14 claws, which I believe are a strength upgrade from her last version. She has got Field Marshal Salvage. Warjacks in this model's battlegroup gain Salvage, which reads, and she also has it herself, when a Warjack is destroyed while in this model's melee range, remove d6 damage points from this model. If the destroyed Warjack was a heavy Warjack or a Colossal, add 3 additional damage points healed. She has Cold Soul, and she has Steady Still. She's got a long enough spell list. She has her basic nuke, which is one of the better crappy 2-cost nukes. Arcantric Bolt, cost 2, range 10, pow 12. And a Warjack damaged by Arcantric Bolt becomes stationary for 1 round. She has Curse of Shadows, featured on many other Crick's models. Minus 2 arm to target model unit. That unit cannot make free strikes, and a model can advance through affected models if it has enough movement to move completely past. That's cost 3, range 8, upkeep spell. She has Failsafe, cost 2, range 6, upkeep. Target-friendly faction Warjack gains plus 2 arm and does not suffer the effects of crippled systems. She has Locomotion. The spellcaster spends up to 3 focus points to cast Locomotion. Target Warjack in the spellcaster's battlegroup immediately advances up to 1 inch for each focus point spent. Warjack can be targeted by Locomotion only once per turn. And finally, she has Spell Piercer, which is control area spell, which gives friendly faction model units, weapons, blessed, and magical for 1 turn. Her feat, Mechanism of Destruction, while in Mordenebra's command range, that's command range, which is 9, models in her battle group gain flank with another model in Mordenebra's battle group. That's for 1 turn. Flank means that whenever another model in the battle group is in range of your target with a melee attack, you gain plus 2 to attack rolls and an additional die. So that is all of the things on Mordenebra's card. So, Ryan, what do you think?
Okay, so I know there's been quite mixed reactions, I guess, to Mordenebra 2, and that quite a lot of people were excited about Morty 1 after the changes to Darylus, and to kind of look at the Morty 2 as a bit of a slap in the face, but the way I look at her is that if you've got enough niche corner case tools and you use enough of them often enough, then they're not niche corner case tools. So, like Arcantric Bolt, you look at it and you go, well, it's a shitty nuke. But actually, Warjack damage becomes stationary. It means it gives you a tool to get around admonition or dodge or bullet dodger. So, yes, it might be a shitty nuke and it costs you probably 4 focus to cast it. But if it means you get a chance to kill Thorn rather than him just dodging away, then actually it's not a shitty nuke. It's a pretty fucking brilliant nuke. And you kind of go through a spell list along those same lines. But one thing I did just notice looking at Locomotion is that it actually says a Warjack can be targeted by Locomotion only one per activation. So if you run Morty 2 and Deathjack in a battle group, I think potentially Deathjack and Morty 2 can target the same Warjack with Locomotion, because Deathjack can cast Locomotion, and because it doesn't reference his control area, he's still in the battle group, so he can cast it and the Warjack can move with it. So if Morty goes, she casts Locomotion for 3 inches on, say, Barathrum, but Barathrum's quite good for 15 points. Deathjack then casts it, and Barathrum effectively gains 6 inches of threat range, risk-free effectively, because compared to like Morty 1, where you got overrun and you run the risk of like tough models or not cranking enough damage on a jack. Whereas Locomotion, yes, it means you got to take death jack. But actually just randomly gaining 6 inches of threat is really good. But the money for me is is actually Spell Piercer, just because Spell Piercer alone, I think, gives us a chance to build it for some matchups that might be troublesome, like some Jack Heavy Men off list, Signar, Boulder 2 with Waldrath. So I want to try her, and I'm not sure she's as bad as the rap she's getting at the moment.
Well, certainly that was a much more optimistic assessment than I'd anticipated. Even given our usual level of optimism, that locomotion catch is a really good one. I hadn't thought about at all.
It sounds quite good. If you've got, say, locomotion is effectively, if you cast it twice, it's an overrun.
I mean, it costs three times as much, but it doesn't involve rolling any dice.
Cost three off of Morty, cost three off of... But even if you look at her feet, I think, between her feet, failsafe, you kind of have to choose, I think, at the list building stage, whether you want to lose locomotion or not. As in, if you don't want to use locomotion, then you build for failsafe the feet with like a Kraken and a Ragman, so you're kind of stacking all those buffs on a Kraken that then becomes very hard to kill with failsafe salvage. So you can put your own Jacks in his melee range, so then if they've got to clear off your damaged Stalkers or your damaged Scavengers or whatever, you're cracking healing off of them. But then, even then, she benefits from her own feet. So, actually, if you run her with Ragman, if you bring the Kraken anyway, the Kraken goes in, kills a heavy without the feet. Morty, quite sturdy enough to stand his own. Armor 17 is not the worst. 19 boxes is quite respectable. And with her own feet and Dark Shroud, you've got a Mat 8 Pal 16 Weapon Master, which is pretty much Witcher 3 level, which is not bad.
Two initials as well.
Two initials. So you're swinging 9 attacks. Witcher 3 gets 7 without his feet. So 9 attacks at Mat 8 Pal 16 Weapon Master is pretty respectable. 11-inch threat as well, which isn't the worst.
That's very true. It's very true indeed. Like,
I haven't looked at it like that.
Yeah.
No, me either.
The other interesting thing for me is that she's, you look at the front of the card, she's actually a construct and undead, which means if you're running her in, say, Infernal Machines, where you're probably bringing along Necrotech to fix your jack and Necrosurgeons to keep the Mechtrawl engine going, then actually the Surgeons and the Necrotech can both heal her up. So that one turn where she's swinging in the breeze under their feet, if she doesn't die, which is a big if, but if she doesn't die, she's probably actually going to be pretty much healed back to full health between a Necrotech or two and a Necrosurgeon.
And she has Salvage personally as well.
Yeah.
So if she wrecks anything up, she can heal that as well. So maybe, well, that's certainly one thing I've seen overlooked quite a bit is her personal power. I only really noticed the increased power in her weapons when I was reading through it there. Because you always immediately jump to the spell and feed card with a caster.
Yeah.
Looking for the action. Her personal power is pretty solid. And her defensive stats are okay. I mean, you don't want her swinging in the breeze, but...
yeah, sure.
It does lead me to think that, and given the limited range on her feet as well, that you're going to have to think of it as a counterpunch feat.
Yeah.
Unless you're... like, the biggest projection you can get out of the feat is have her within 9 inches of the back of a Kraken. Does that even work? No, it actually doesn't really, because the model making the attack still needs to be in her command range. So, I mean, I can see why it's not control, because they didn't want everyone to go immediately to how many Stalkers can we run? Run into, essentially, an Una problem all over again.
Yeah, because on 24-inch having flying Stalkers, or what I'm saying, 28 inches, that really sucks.
Yeah, and then you've got your locomotion on your Stalkers, they can threaten all the way from downtown.
Also that. Kind of funny, though.
It would have been very funny. My first thought on things to abuse with the feet on other than a Kraken was Scavengers for East Wheat Finisher plus Flank.
Yeah.
To throw a giant pile of dice at the bad guys.
Isn't it like 5 dice?
Yep.
That's sweet. Just because you get to do 5 dice.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't want to throw 5 dice at things?
Yeah. I think that makes it, that makes it then just a default choice in the list, because you get a chance to throw 5 dice at them. How often does that happen in crit? Come on.
And your 5 dice averages up to like 26, 27. So pretty decent damage on the charge with massive potential for spikes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and still Spell Piercer and all that jazz.
Yeah, and you got all that jazz to get through the Arcane Shields and chuck out Curse of Shadows on the tough things. I mean, I can see her being very focus strapped because she has all of these niche tools that she probably wants to use two of in a turn.
Maybe so.
And unfortunately, she can't fail safe herself.
No.
In the late game. She probably wants to bring an Arc Node to have locomotion set up, which is always frustrating. At least a an Arc Node that's forced to do work at least has access to her feet for that one turn that has to do some work.
Or provides the flanker, right?
Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I haven't built any lists for her yet that I'm happy with. I think I've got to get her on the table before, you know, other than go throw a Kraken in, throw some Scavengers in, sort of play it and see what happens. Because I feel like with Salvage and a fail-saved Kraken, you want to build in lots of little jacks that are going to die so that they can't nickel and dime your Kraken over a couple of turns.
Yeah.
They have to try and go all in, and that's a thing you can manage.
Especially with fail-save.
Yeah. Fail-save in general is pretty nice on a lot of Krix jacks that have systems in really shitty places. Mm-hmm. It does protect you against the random spike takes your arm off problem. Which is a universal Krix Jack problem.
Yep. And the only Krix Jack that can actually handle spikes is a Kraken.
Since we've got the locomotion trick as well, a fail-safe Death Jack does pretty good work also, and is pretty good at healing himself back up, and with more than ever too, heals up whether he's killing warrior models or warjacks.
Yeah.
I suppose it's just a question of how well you can leverage the healing. Which to me suggests that you want to bring inflictors. Because then you can manage a little bit about, you know, what's getting hit. There's a bit of damage spread around the place.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, perhaps she has game. And to be fair, nearly everything that I have looked at in Mark III and assumed was bad wasn't as bad when I put it on the table.
Yeah.
Especially true for Krix in general.
Yeah.
It works both ways, though. Many of the things that you think are fucking great happen to be not that great on the table either.
True.
Or is that just me?
Well, you know, when I switched back to Krix after Trolls, I had low expectations because of all the internet buzz. So I feel like I've been pleasantly surprised nearly every time I've built a list and played it with how solid it's been in play.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sure, there's some lists that I built that just flopped in the wind against the meta, but once I got a handle on where the meta was at, and the kind of things I needed to bring, our great example that we've come back to since episode 1 is Ghost Fleet.
Yeah.
We all looked at it and thought it wasn't going to be that great, then played it and realized it was incredible.
We were all so wrong.
We were so wrong. And Ghost Fleet is a problematic list for a lot of things, but let's move on then to the next new release, Captain Iacos' character jack, Charybdis. At first, I want to say that I really enjoy the fact that they have put the K in there so it's pronounced correctly, as opposed to spelling it with the CH that makes everyone pronounce it wrong.
Yeah.
And if we don't get a multi-headed warjack named Syla at some point, I'm going to be sad.
Yes. Anybody who has studied anything remotely ancient, and by that I mean Roman or Greek, I think feel the same way.
I want robot Typhon, is what I'm saying. Basically, exactly like Typhon, except a robot.
Yeah, maybe so. And then because it's Greek, 5 points cheaper? No?
Yeah, let's hope so.
We used to have that.
Because it's a warjack, it should be like 5 points cheaper than Typhon, right?
Yes, I agree.
So Charybdis is on the Crabjack chassis, so speed 5, strength 12, mat 7, rat 5, defense 12, armor 18. He's amphibious, he's immune to corrosion, he has Pathfinder. He has a range weapon that is spray 8, pow 12, corrosion damage, but not continuous corrosion. That spray 8 also has critical blind, which is pretty sweet. He has 2 melee weapons, each range 1 base, but they're chained weapons, so they become 4-inch reach during his activation. They're pound strength 16, and they're also open fists, so he has 2 open fists. He has a star action, Acid Cloud, which centers a 4-inch AoE on the model. And models in the AoE when it's placed, or that enter around their activation in it, suffer continuous corrosion. He has a bond with Iacos, which gives him prowl, which means he can basically take a star action to give himself stealth. And he's steady, because he's a crabjack. And he costs 19 points, which is where the sad facing be. Because up until that, I was thinking he's pretty good. But 19 is a lot of points.
Yeah, a lot of points.
But let's start with the positives, though. His base threat, with no extension whatsoever, is 12 inches. Which is a really solid melee threat range. And he has a solid gun.
Yeah, I like that gun. It was pointed out on the Crick's Facebook page, or group, that actually the gun has a range between 4 and 8 inches. Because anything that's closer than 4 inches gets engaged by collision.
Mm. Oh, that's actually super frustrating.
It's so bad.
It is really hard to get sprays. Oh, that's awful. So I suppose that just adds to the fact that his best synergy is with Icos.
Yeah,
so he can at least assault something on the feet turn.
So he can at least assault something on the feet turn, yeah. As it is, the fact that he can't trigger stealth without Icos is a bit of a downer.
Yeah.
He's got such a respectable threat range, and Mark III is such a threat rangey game, that I can't fully chuck him out at least with Icos. Either Icos 1, maybe, because that has Escort built in, which gives him a 14-inch threat range, and the ability to gain Grievous Wounds on those weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And he has the bond in that instance as well. But also with Icos 2, you do then have the potential threat range of Speed 8, 9, 10 with a Sail, 3 more, plus Reach, 17 inches, which is a fairly absurd threat range.
Yeah. And he can actually spray something 25 inches away.
Yeah. I'd think of it more as just that little bit of extra damage when you're charging in. I mean, yeah. His base pow is not great. It's only 16. Though it does ignore shields, which can be highly relevant with a lot of the bricky jacks and things. So that seems to be his main game is my reach is so long that I have massive threat.
My reach is so long.
I was trying to tastefully dodge that joke.
Yeah.
Gains an extra 3 inches during activation.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
I get that.
We get jokes. So what do you think? Is there a place for him?
Well, if you're playing Ayako, then yes. I think the main downside of Charybdis is that, well, if you're playing Charybdis, you're probably playing Ayako as well. That comes with all kinds of things that mean that you can't play, I don't know, Denegra, for example.
This is true. So one use for him that I've thought of during my long dojoing session on the plane today was in Lich 2 or Lich 1, where you're already building a cloud wall. If you put Charybdis on Icos 1, you can add another 4-inch cloud to the wall and have him be stealthed inside it, which, depending on whether you can place him safely in, like, from melee threats, I mean, that does extend the cloud wall quite significantly, while placing a model with quite a long threat range inside the wall to project force forward, which is something you always want to be doing with these cloud wall casters. It's a lot of points to invest in doing so, but it's something that might be valuable. Extending a cloud wall from 9 to 13 or 12 to 16 is pretty big.
Yeah. Well, if you really just want to extend your cloud wall, there are other options, of course, that cost only 7 points, but...
They cost 7 points and dead model.
True.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, sure, I don't want to be overly negative. Yeah, it could work.
I'm not going to entirely discount it until I put it on the table. I'm not super hopeful on this front. It's a shame because his model is sweet. I think maybe... He'll work really well with Captain Icos, and with everyone else, he'll be a little sad.
Yes. And from that perspective, I think it makes it not a bad war deck, or not a bad design choice in general.
That's true.
Yeah, it gives you more of an incentive for Icos, who I think is generally, or practically not played at all, compared to I mean.
Yeah, he's absolutely not. But I also think he's a bit better than he's given credit for. Just because extreme threat ranges are a really powerful thing in managing the table.
That he does extreme threat ranges with Crazy Jackson. That kind of Yeah, you circle back to, is it worth it to play crates with lots of checks?
You know, since I last thought about Captain Icos, we've gained cheap shield guards in Bruthrolf, which helps with the delivery somewhat. He gets another heavy that helps deliver itself. So,
There might be a possibility in, what's that called again? The new tier list.
In Infernal Machines. Yeah, I think so.
You have the extreme threat ranges and the ambush. So you can give a bit of damage if you do, damage if you don't, I think.
Also, hyper aggressive jacks that are already threatening massive threat ranges. It's pretty great. Ryan, do you want to move on to our next new thing? Hellslinger. Ooker Spooker Kane.
Yeah, please. So, the Hellslinger Phantom is, those of you who've been not following the story like me, apparently it's created by some slice of Kane's soul or something that became undead and, I don't know, become some kind of ghost floating around shooting people, which is quite cool. Anyway, so speed 6, strength 4, irrelevant. Mat 4, also irrelevant. Rat 8, very relevant. Defense 15, armor 13. Command 5, again irrelevant. Gunfighter, undead, incorporeal. 2, Wraithstorm pistols. Range 10, power 12, magical. 5 boxes, 7 points. Quite a lot for one solo. Look on the back of the card and there's a lot of words, so then you see why 7 points. Collect souls and things he shoots with his guns, and he can then use those to boost his attack or damage rolls. He's got Swift Hunter, so when he kills models with his ranged attacks, he can move another 2 inches. So each time he shoots, he has to choose a shot type with his Wraithstorm pistol. They're kind of following the Kane 2 theme. Quick Reaver's Wounds, which is on a crit hit model, hit loses tough, kind of have damage removed for one round. Which is kind of okay, but you're only really going to get it if you're boosting. Ghost Shot. This model ignores line of sight, concealment, and cover when making attacks with this weapon. So factor in the fact that he's already Rat 8, Ghost Shot is probably the go-to shot most of the time. And then his third shot is Incendiary. Causes fire damage and models hit, suffer the fire continuous effect. So if you're going for models under something like McBain's feet, for example, where they're super tough and you can't kill them, you just set a couple of them on fire because why not? You've got reload, so you can spend soul tokens to make an additional ranged attack with each of his pistols. So if you can hit and kill 2 models with your initial ranged attack, you'll pick up 2 souls, which would then let you reload for the each pistol to make 2 more attacks. The other thing to mention is that he is a Crix Wraith solo, which means he qualifies to be a free solo in Ghost Fleet, which is pretty amazing. It's incredible.
His very existence is a straight upgrade to Ghost Fleet because he is just a better pistol wraith.
Without a doubt.
He's magnificent. And I think in particular, he cleaned up the doubts I had about running Denegra 1 as the Ghost Fleet caster. Because his Ghost Fleet shots are just 2 more very dangerous shots in that potential assassination run.
Yeah.
And he does plenty of work against infantry. 4 kills a turn. I mean, if you want to take him with Epic Scar.
8 shots!
He just kills shit for days. Days,
like,
days.
Oh, you brought a unit. That's cute.
Oh, yeah. He's beautiful.
I always said for the longest time that Crix had, not necessarily as a faction by design, but they didn't have easy access to spot removal. And I always said for the longest time that if Crix got access to Deathstalkers, like a pair of Deathstalkers or something similar, then actually that would up their game quite a lot. And the Hellslinger Phantom is just that. Like, if there's living enemy models, then it basically gives you 2 Deathstalker solos in one model.
One model that costs 0 points.
Yeah.
Nearly every time you take him is going to be in Ghost Fleet.
Yeah.
Do you think he's worth the 7 outside of Ghost Fleet?
I think you need a way to get at least 2 turns of shooting out of him. So you need some kind of feat to protect him, whether that be like Denny 1 or Scar 2, or your list is running a Cloud War, so like Lich 2, or maybe Coven List, maybe.
I do particularly like the Scar 2 synergy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he gets up to impossible defense levels. Well, not impossible, but, you know, Defense 20 is pretty safe.
It's pretty good, not bad.
And, of course, he murders entire units single-handedly with her, so that's beautiful too. Also, in that Scar 2 situation, he can also aim and then move, like, 14 inches if he hits all the shots.
What's that, 8 shots, 2-inch move per shot, 16 inches, which is not bad.
16, yeah. Just all the way across the board.
It was something that Lilith too used to do in Mark 2.
Yeah.
She could start in one zone and shoot her way to the other. But now we have our own version of that.
Yeah, he is... Oh, I just can't wait to put him on the table. When's that model out? How long do I have to wait?
May.
Oh. Oh, it's so far away.
So far away.
I was kind of hoping he was slated for early April release, since I've got a tournament in April.
No, the book and Morty are April. Whole thing of Phantom is May at the moment.
Shame. Though, if the book's out in April, that means Infernal Machines is available for that tournament, so I might start trying to get my hands on, I don't know, a few hundred Brute Thralls. we'll get to that. Yeah, with the existence of the Hellslinger Phantom, every one of my Ghost Fleet lists has changed to have just one Pistol Wraith and a Hellslinger in.
Yes.
Not really changing anything, but I feel like the list just feels nastier in that mode.
Well, you have to be honest, it's 2 extra points as well. I mean, your army just got 2 points bigger.
Mm-hmm.
But if it doesn't feel nastier for that, then you have just a shitty 7 points.
Yeah, 17 free points in Ghost Fleet.
Not bad.
Pistol Wraith, Rengrave, Hellslinger. Can't argue with that. So, do we have... Was that the whole set of new releases, other than the book?
Yeah.
So, before we move on to Infernal Machines, I do want to talk a little bit about the Insider that dropped last week, where they talked about what's going into the next cycle of CID. Firstly, the Bane theme and the Bane models are going to CID, so I'd like to note on air that we are prophets and wizards. We discussed at length what we would like out of Bane CID in our last episode. So, yeah, prophets and wizards. The big Crix news that was in that Insider is, well, after we have talked at length about how much, well, I love Wraith Engines anyway, the Wraith Engine is going into CID along with the other battle engines. And a couple of notes as to what will be happening. One is that nearly every battle engine, that's their words, we'll now have 30 to 38 boxes, which is a significant increase. And also, battle engines are getting key roles involving army synergy. And the ability that's going to go into CID for the Wraith engine is a new version of Unhallowed. So, current Unhallowed gives +2 arm to incorporeal models within the command range. New Unhallowed, which of course may not emerge unchanged, gives friendly faction undead models +2 arm against ranged and magical attacks and immunity to blast damage. This is an absolute game changer if it comes Huge. Through undamaged. All of those undead models you couldn't quite find a place for are all of a sudden extremely relevant.
Yeah, who are those?
The first thing that came to mind for me was Bane Warriors with the unit detachment and Death Ward with Scavarus was my main thought, but also Epic Scar. They will be armor 19 against ranged attacks and magical attacks every turn, while being tough and having rise. All of a sudden, that delivers them extremely well. Extremely, extremely well.
Yeah, but let's be honest here. Couldn't you find a place for Bane Warriors? I mean, I'm playing Inferno this weekend. I think I have them in both my list.
Yeah, I've never had much trouble finding a place for Bane Warriors, but this, in particular, makes them a really powerful anchor unit that's going to cause a lot of trouble for the opponent trying to remove them.
True.
It also means that whatever list they're in has both the Wraith Engine and the Bane Warriors as two sources of Dark Shroud.
Yes.
I mean, you can also go for Death Warded Bane Knights to get your Armor 20 every turn Vengeance guys, which is also pretty sweet.
That is true.
You could also get your armor 22 Bane Riders.
Yeah, but they were still thin.
I think they're still bad, but we'll try and fix that through CID too.
Yeah, or to all kinds of prophecies that we're going to do here.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're listening, Will Pagani.
And also, it makes Brute Thralls really, really good shield guards.
That is true.
Because all of a sudden, they're not dying to what they're shield guarding necessarily.
That is very much true.
And immunity to blast damage is nice for their Mechanithral buddies.
And for the Necrosurgeons, because that's how they die.
Very true. I mean, that Wraith Engine, as written, suddenly becomes something that you very much build an army around. And I love that. I mean, like I said, I already have much love for the Wraith Engine, but you can absolutely build an army around it. It's interesting to note that it's not in the Infernal Machines theme force, and if it's also not in the Bane theme force, that makes for some really interesting decisions.
Yeah, also don't say that too much out loud, please.
I certainly hope it's in the Bane theme force, because its synergy with Bane's is really apparent. And
yeah,
if it's not in the theme force, you're going to lose 10 to 15 free points, which means you're asking to pay 30 points for your Wraith Engine. So, which is, that's a lot, no matter how much better it gets. That's a whole heap of your army. But hopefully it's there in that theme force. And if not, we've got excellent choices. Hashtag choices. Hashtag design space.
Yay.
As the world's biggest Wraith Engine fan, I am super hyped about that decision. It's also fantastic with a whole heap of our casters, because they get casually tougher against ranged attacks. The vast majority of our casters will jump to a really solid armor value against ranged attacks, just by having that in exist. And anything that slightly discourages you from playing Denegra is probably good for the faction. You know, it makes Scabrous, for instance, much more tempting as an alternative to Denegra.
He might actually jump up to be top dog. Or, even Terminus. How about you also just go fuck yourself? This guy is not gonna die.
Terminus just becomes completely fucking invincible against ranged attacks. If he wasn't already, he really is now. A whole heap of ranged attacks don't even scratch him at that point.
Yeah, it becomes a little thing like, so you're playing Legion? That's cute.
Certainly the Liches don't hate the random extra bit of armor.
Hmm.
There's a bunch of other Iron Liches that don't see a lot of play.
Of course he'd want. He'd like that Wraith Engine as well.
Yeah, he would. There's a place for Ngorshade 2 as well. There's a place for it in a lot of places. So,
yeah.
I look forward to testing that out. And, you know, beginning the CID process in an entirely unpartisan way, screaming at anybody on the forums who says to touch it.
Yes.
No, don't touch it, it's perfect, go away, leave it alone. So that gives us, like, a lot of really interesting things to look forward to. And a lot of, particularly if the Wraith Engine comes out unscathed, it means all of that undead stuff that all of the Crix players in the world have been lamenting that we don't play enough of anymore is suddenly back on the table. Which, I think, brings us cleanly to our second segment, which is our dojo segment, but this time we are going to focus on the new theme force that will be joining us in the Crix army book, Infernal Machines.
Yay!
So, what Infernal Machines gives us: an army made using Infernal Machines must include only the following models: any Crix Warcaster, any non-character Warjacks, Deathjack, Malus, Iron Lich models and units, any Thrall models and units, any Warwitch models or units, Necrotechs, Wraith Solos, Solos with the Battlegroup Controller ability, and Dara Wrath, which is a pretty extensive list. And also a list with a lot of hashtag design space for future Warwitch things and future Iron Lich things in particular. And our benefits are, for every 20 points of Thrall models or units, and it's worth keeping in mind that a lot of the solos in this theme force are Thralls, you can add one Necrosurgeon Stitch Thralls unit, a Command Detachment, or a non-character solo. Unfortunately, they stopped us from adding Hellslinger Wraith and Dire Wrath for free. Apparently, they have, you know, vaguely competent playtesters who noticed that might be abusive.
Yeah, them playtesters.
The Warjacks in the army game hyper-aggressive, So when they suffer damage from an enemy attack, anytime except when advancing, they can immediately make a full advance towards the attacking model. Also worth noting, that's not warjacks in the caster's battle group, but any and all warjacks. And finally, one Mechanithral unit gains Ambush, which is pretty sweet, because Ambush is cool. So, class, the first thing that interested you about Infernal Machines?
Ambush.
Tell us more.
I used to play Box Truck Ambushers in my Gristle list a long time ago. And they were just glorious. You could put so much pressure on your opponent's play and your opponent's positioning and all that. Just because they threaten to have something up their butt at all times. It would give you a lot of options. For example, you could, if you were not doing great on a scenario, just ambushing the units and quickly contesting from a side where your opponent actually doesn't really expect you to be contesting, and things like that. It could really offer you some options and could get you out of a tight spot. And the only thing or the problem that trolls used to have was bring out your box all the way to that side of the table, but with crits, you could just run up a chicken and get your boss there. And you need to ghost walk something, or just run up a chicken and get the ghost walk going. And of course, you got the pressure from the middle of your army that still, yeah, I like it.
Another thing I really like on top of that ambush is that Soul Hunters are a Thrall unit. So Soul Hunters are available in this list. They count towards your free points. And Soul Hunters are excellent at putting wide pressure on. So if you're sending a unit of Soul Hunters up either flank, your opponent has to pay a lot of attention to those flanks, not just because of those big Soul Hunter threat ranges and a lot of Soul Hunter speed, but because any one of those units of Soul Hunters could suddenly be backed up by a full Mechanithral unit.
Yeah.
Which, if you wanted to add all the trimmings, could be as many as 14 more models. So I think it gives Infernal Machines really strong wide play on scenarios. And I know we've only seen one 2017 scenario, but that was a very wide scenario. And I suspect if there's going to be a lot of zones and elements, which they seem to be indicating is going to be true in 2017, then having the ability to play wide is going to continue to be strong. And that is, I think, something that Infernal Machines with Ambush and very fast units and Soul Hunters can do a lot of work with. So, Ryan, what was the first thing that jumped out for you with Infernal Machine?
Just the really widespread of models that are actually available in that theme for, along with, just a few clutch characters in Deathjack with a Shadow Combine, Malice, and Dara Wrath, and those four characters kind of opens up quite a lot of options in terms of list building and how you can build those lists. If you look at Ghost Fleet, it's quite a narrow design in that you have the three types of units and a small handful of solos, and then kind of the template for the list is quite almost predefined, whereas the models that are available in Infernal Machines and the benefits you get, I think there's different ways you can apply it. Like for me, Coven was my first thought, but I've got a soft spot for Coven after playing them for the best part of 6 months, and the Double Soul Hunters and the Scarlet Thrallers are very good fit in there. Second thought was actually Scavenger. Just because, actually, if you're running a pair of Arknodes, you've got, against savvy players, they're going to turn models off to be able to face the side of the board, so you're not getting those backstrikes as easily. Whereas, if they've got a heavier jack sat on the tail end of your zone, if you're playing, I don't know, Entrenched, for example, they've got a pin in the outer light ward, I don't know, a hunter or something, sat on the edge of your zone, facing the edge of the board, so you're not getting backstrikes, whereas all it takes is a running Arknode, one TK, and then your Metzors and your Brutes will come along and give a one at the backside and take it out. So factor that in alongside the natural synergy between Scavenger and Warwick Sirens, so you can make their spray super accurate. So if you're bringing Warwick Sirens anyway, that makes quite a good shout for Iron Lich Overseers running Caesar. So it all seems to kind of mesh quite well in that you've got Scavenger playing the support role, and between the Iron Lich Overseers and the Warwick Sirens, they're kind of running your heavy hitters for you.
Well, let's talk about the Iron Lich Overseers for a bit. Because at 5 points, they're pretty expensive. At 3, they seem like a much better value.
That's so good. At 0 points.
Oh, shit, Sherlock.
We've all gone to Seethers as the immediate first Jack to pair with the Iron Lich Overseer. And there's a lot of good reasons for that, specifically in this theme force. For one thing, you know, they just synergize really well with Jack Marshals. So for anyone who hasn't, like, had to think about the full package that Seethers bring on an Iron Lich Overseer, the Iron Lich Overseer gives them stealth to help deliver them. They charge for free, which allows you to use Crush for +2 damage on your melee. They have a naturally high mat. They have multiple initials, which synergizes very well with the fact that the Iron Lich Overseer also gives them Dark Shroud, which is a thing that this list doesn't have easy access to, outside of a couple of casters. And we've talked at length about how valuable Dark Shroud is in making the 4 or 5 armor swing happen.
Yeah.
So they bring all of that to this list for the low cost of 13 points. In addition, really nice little bit of synergy that gives you lots of opportunities to outplay your opponent, in that those Seethers become hyper-aggressive counter-chargers. There's so much reactive play in that. And I've been playing lots of games with or against Grimkin recently. Mostly against, and a couple with. But figuring out the puzzle of your own counterplay is really, really satisfying. And this gives a little bit of that to Cricks. A little bit of, you want to throw a shot at that Seether. You've got your one gun that sees through stealth. You want to get some damage on that Seether. And then it hyper-aggressives into a spot that sets up counter-charges that further mess with your opponent. That Seether can get places on the opponent's turn. Its counter charges are £19, assuming no other buffs are going on, which is significant. Yeah. And it's a fast jack with hyper aggressive. It's got lots and lots to recommend it. If you're taking Iron Liches with Seethers, you don't have enough points to get 3 free solos, but you do get your 2 Iron Lich Overseers for free if you want to go that route. And it's also interesting just how many different solos you can get for free in the list. Like, it's a really long list of things that can be used for free cards. You could have free Scarlock Thralls, you can have free Warwitch Sirens, you can have free Iron Liches, free Pistol Wraiths. You can even have free Blow Thralls, if you are so inclined.
Can you have Morbius?
I've never put Morbius on the table, but a pod of 2 Blow Thralls and Morbius costing you a total of 6 points. And that's with Morbius contributing towards your free points. So, say, double Soul Hunters, Morbius, 2 Blow Thralls, comes to 42 points. If you've got a caster that could turn on those guns, I think that might be something. I mean, Pow 14 with a caster in Crix that turns on guns, so, Denegra is your obvious choice, because it's always an obvious choice.
Got to.
You've got Scar 2 to blanket the world in AoE4s. You've got Scabrous, just in general, pretty good at turning on guns, and can turn them on for both damage or accuracy, depending on what you need. So I think there's something in that worth exploring. Another thing that I've thought about on Iron Lich Overseers is Leviathans. The D3 is always frustrating, but the Take Aim Jack Marshall ability puts their guns to a pretty high power. Pow 17 against large base targets before you apply any buffs.
Not bad.
Is pretty significant. I've also considered with, again, like a gun caster like Denegra, or maybe Coven, because Coven can do that sort of asymmetrical gun line, where you can't shoot them, ever, but they can curse the shadows a target and shoot back quite effectively. Or with Denegra, just for usual Denegra reasons. Or Scar 2, to turn on the black spot, which at least amplifies your bad rolls on the D3, so they at least get a couple of shots against infantry. And potentially lots. So there's things you can do there. I always liked Leviathans on Iron Lich Overseers. But I like them a little more. It all comes back to D3 is painful.
Yeah.
The more Leviathans you put in a list, the less that becomes a problem.
Sure, and you're not using Seethers. Just the random thought, how would we rate Harrowers on them? On Iron Lich Overseers.
Pretty good, I think. Because they have a sort of dual arms thing, you know, they wanna charge and shoot. So I don't feel they get the best out of the various Jack Marshall abilities. But Harrowers are nice multi-purpose Jacks. They can threaten a ghost shot from downtown, which is never a terrible thing. And it's a ghost shot that can power itself up a little bit by going in and killing a few infantry on the way. So, yeah, perhaps.
I mean, the thing is, yeah, I like the versatility of the Harrower. Because, yeah, you can do many things in one turn.
Mm-hmm.
It still has pressure, right?
Yep.
Well, that, I mean, the thing about the Harrower is that mostly it was kind of double-fisted. With the Iron Age Overseer by itself, it was about 20.
Yep.
That gets shit done. And if you have something standing near the target that you want to kill, or that you want to hit with your power 20, I mean, you might just grab some souls and get something, yeah, like a soul trade going.
Mm-hmm. So, will we go through some lists?
Yeah.
Ryan, I remember you mentioning in the chat before the episode that you had a list with a lot of Brute Thralls in it. And I want you to come and join me in the jank tank of taking absurd numbers of models in a list, so please tell me.
Let me just rebuild the list quickly. I'm not worrying on my tablet because it's not working on my phone at the moment. If you want to crack them with yours, we can come back to mine.
Okay, so what I'll do, I'll go through what is one of my two favorite Infernal Machines lists at the moment. So I'll start with the first list I liked, Iron Lich Asphyxius, with a Scarlock Thrall, Deathjack, and a Death Ripper. The primary reason that it's a Scarlock Thrall and not the Wither Shadow is the Scarlock counts towards 3 points. The Wither Shadow do not, and that just helped things work out more cleanly. And the Scarlock still does what I need it to do, which is create another cloud in the cloud wall. It packs 2 Iron Lich Overseers, both of which are free, both of which are Marshalling Seeders. There is a Necrosurgeon and Stitch Thralls. There is a minimum unit of Mechanothralls with 2 Brutes, a minimum unit of Mechanothralls with 3 Brutes, and a unit of Soul Hunters. This is a riff on the good old Iron Lich Asphyxius Cloudwall list. Breath of Corruption is a spell that can be spell-slaved or cast by Deathjack. Between Asphyxius, the Scarlock, and Deathjack, you can create 4 clouds as long as you have some models to target them off, but you've got Mechanothralls, and you've got a Necrosurgeon to recur those Mechanothralls. And you can target precisely 4 AoE 3 clouds to block line of sight to your army. And they also do a point of corrosion damage to anything that walks into them. So it has the nice effect of also actually blocking infantry. Add on to that, that you've got counter-charging models in your Seeders, which means that if anything chunkier tries to walk into your cloud wall, it's going to get punched in the face by 2 pair 19s before it gets to do anything.
Why 2? Because you have 2 Seeders?
2 Seeders, yep. And then you've got an ambushing unit of Mechanothralls with 3 Brutes. You've got your unit of Soul Hunters, which will threaten a long way beyond the clouds. And you've got another unit of Mechanothralls knocking about for making clouds. And you also, because the fact that you can stealth the Seeders, so if you've got an opposing army that can't see through stealth, then you can use the cloud wall to protect stuff in the middle, and you can put the Seeders out in the flanks quite safely. Mm-hmm. So you've got an ability to play a bit wider, and even if they've got a little bit of anti-stealth shooting, you've got some Brute Thralls lurking around there to shield guard some of that stuff. So you've got lots of overlapping range protection present in the list, and at the end of all that, you are delivering a Deathjack and a pair of Seeders, all 3 of which can carry Darkshroud around personally. So this list can put Darkshroud wherever.
And you have a guy standing behind it who just put Parasite on something.
Mm-hmm. So you've got an ever-present 5 armor swing. So that's putting your Seeders at pound strength 24 when you add in the Jack Marshall bonus, Parasite, and Darkshroud. Seems like it would get some work done.
Yeah.
You could also drop a pair of Brute Thralls, which I'm strongly considering, to get 1 Warwitch Siren in there. You just use that 1 minimum unit of Mechanothralls as wall fodder, as cloud wall fodder.
Mm-hmm.
And that also means that you're not kind of jamming up your cloud wall area with medium bases, which can sometimes be a problem with this list. Like, moving through itself can be hard. So you maybe want to keep those models out of the way. And you've got your Warwitch Siren to deal with any disruption that might be dicking around. And if you need that 1 more swing, you know, you want 1 more power 24 to really get it done. You can do that. The only thing that makes me sad is that I can't fit a Cankerworm in there no matter how hard I try. I mean, I could drop a whole Overseer and Seether, possibly, take some free points elsewhere, do something like that. But the doubles, like three really high POW heavies, seems to be what this list is threatening to deliver more than anything else. So I really like that. It feels like it's got lots of overlapping defenses. It's got the fact that Lich always has an assassination in this pocket, which I like in any list. Lich 1's personal power can be extremely relevant in the late game.
Mm-hmm.
You can really close out a game in multiple ways, and that's always nice to have. So this list just feels really solid in lots of different ways.
Who knows? There might actually be a choice. But I want Lich 1. Shall I play him in Ghost League, or shall I play him in Infernal Machine?
Like, he's a really good leader for both of those lists. But I like him better in Infernal Machines because it turns the Cloud Wall back on.
Mm-hmm.
So this feels a lot like the early Mark III Lich 1 Cloud Wall lists, but using all Crick's stuff and
better.
Having more points in it, which is great, and comes back as well to the ambush thing. The Cloud Wall breaks up pretty hard, and so having the ambush unit helps force the action into the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got Soul Hunters that can go wide as well. They've got long enough threat ranges that sometimes they can just sit outside of easy gun range. You've got enough armor swings everywhere that Soul Hunters can... Everything can kill heavies in the Lich 1 list. It doesn't matter what you're throwing at them, you know? So that's my first one. I think my second one might step on the toes of Ryan's list a little bit, so I'm going to let Ryan describe his list next.
Kind of went full ham in that I've been looking at Brute Throws quite a lot lately, and for 2 points, it seems if you can get enough of them to reach critical mass, then I think there might be something there, even if you have got to take shitty metros to get there. So anyway, the list. Gorshade 2, Deathjack 1 Death Ripper, the fairly standard battle group for him. 2 pods of scrap throws, one of which are free because of theme. 2 necrosurgeon units, 6 minimum units of mech throws, each with 3 brute throws. So you've got a total of 36 mechanic throws and 18 brute throws, because why not? Think about it. I think it might actually have some legs. I just don't want to buy 18 brute thralls just yet.
I think that's very much a how many brute thralls can you borrow for the event list.
Yeah.
I love this list a bit, and I'm really strongly looking at finding out how many brute thralls I can borrow for the next couple of tournaments.
Even down to the 3 solos that you take. I was looking at, like, you can take a 3 bloat thrall. But then actually the 3 scrap throws work out the better option, because those 3 scrap throws when you feet are bringing you back 3 brute throws, which is 6 points.
One question I have here is that you have 36 mechanothralls and you're replacing 6 a turn. Do you need the scraps, or can you just turn mechanothralls into brutes?
Yeah.
Because it'd be nice to get a more active solo in there. Any one of them, really. There's such a rake of free solos you can take here. I mean, getting in a free Scarlock is pretty nice on Gorshade, because the Scarlock can throw a lot of spells with him.
Yes, that's true. You can probably protect them as well.
I mean, you have a million shield guards.
Yeah, 18.
Oh, it's beautiful, and I love it, really, so much. And I think, like, it's sure as hell hitting critical mass, right?
I think so.
I mean, ignoring the fact that 18 of them are 8 wound models are coming back at full, it's still 50 infantry.
Yeah.
The only thing is Pathfinder, maybe.
Yeah, you got a Pathfinder problem. But, you know, you just...
I've got enough bodies to run around the terrain, that's fine.
Yeah, exactly. You just keep throwing bodies in there.
Exactly. I like it. That's impressive.
I ran a Gorshade 2 list before the Brute Thralls got Shield Guard, where I just brought, like, 12 of them. And that was good. Like, that was just really difficult for my opponent to deal with, given the recursion. But now you're getting the Necrosurgeons for free, which is 4 more Brute Thralls. It's critical mass, and it's such old-school Crick's infantry spam bullshit.
It's going to be so much fun.
Oh, it's, yeah. Well, let's put it this way. I will sure as fuck play this list on Vassal.
I was about to say, like, you haven't actually got, like, a huge amount of good buff for the list, other than kind of, I'm guessing in a list like this, like Gorshade probably just keeps occultation on himself, because when you're running across the table with 18 brute thralls, your caster is kind of the weak link. But between, like, most of the time, you're probably just going to be spamming a Beazle Gate with Deathjack, maybe the Scarlock, and Gorshay, just trying to get some backstrike charges on heavies and things, and then mauling it with brute throws, I think. Other than that, Gorshay just camps and doesn't die, or tries not to die, I think.
Yeah, and you just choke the Mirage on the Deathjack, I guess? Is your highest value target for it?
Good shout.
You could maybe just try to get one bigger unit of my trolls in there, just to have a big unit average.
Yeah, you drop, what, two brutes, and get to, like, a max unit with full brutes ambushing on?
Yeah, that works.
I also went to Gorshay 2, but went a different direction with it. So I went for a double Soul Hunters build.
Mm-hmm.
So my build is Gorshay 2, Deathjack, Night Wretch, a pod of Scrap Thralls, two pods of Scrap Thralls, Darrath, a free Warwitch Siren, two free units of Necrosurgeons and Stitch Thralls, two units of Soul Hunters, and two minimum units of Mechana Thralls with three Brutes each. The main angle on this list is Mirage on Soul Hunters in a list with Darrath threaten forever. They threaten a frankly absurd amount of distance. You probably don't need Dara in there. I could probably cut it for, you know, more Mechana Thralls, basically. But having that extra bit of threat range when the entire army is undead, I think adds up. Extra bit of speed, extra bit of threat range. And you've got, so one of your Soul Hunter units is stealthed and threatens 15 inches with Dara. And the other one is miraged and threatens 17.
Sweet.
Not to mention the fact that they run very fast, indeed, across the board. And, of course, they come back at full health when you feed. So, that's the Soul Hunter show. The main argument for dropping Dara is if you drop Dara and, like, poke around at your points a little bit, basically, you drop Dara and a Warwitch Siren and a Necrosurgeon unit, you can take the free Iron Lich with a Seether, which gets Dark Shroud into the list.
Good shout.
Which gives you your -4 arm swing, which lets Soul Hunters do work against everything.
Yeah.
Of course, then you're only threatening 16 and 14, which is sad.
Yeah, it's not far enough.
You get yourself a heavy hitter in there, and the ability to make other things hit heavy.
Yeah. I prefer the Seether in there.
I think it's better.
Mm.
I've been saying for ages that Gorshay 2 had something to him, and it just so happened that Infernal Machines supported all of the versions of Gorshay 2 that I'd kind of half-built. Brute Thrall Spam was one of my early ideas with him. Infernal Machines facilitates the heck out of that. And abusing Soul Hunters with Mirage was another thing I wanted to do. And lo and behold, Infernal Machines supports that too.
So, Ryan, I got a question for you. You said one of the previous episodes that Gorshay 3 isn't, or that, yeah, the Gorshay 3 isn't the best Ghost Fleet, but that Ghost Fleet is the best Gorshay 3. You still feel the same now that Infernal Machines is there?
So, the problem with Gorshay 3 and Ghost Fleet is that it's built to kind of quite one-dimensional and the pirates are quite predictable. And I'm sure we'll play the long game, but thought about it a little bit, and I think there might be something there with Gorshay 3 and Infernal Machines, just because the units that are in that theme force are quite a natural fit with the kind of stuff that he wanted to bring. So you've got your cheap models, your mech throws, your carrion throws, for your feet targets almost. If you still want to bring Incorporeal, you've got access to Machine Wraith. Ambush gives them a little bit more board presence. The only possible downside to them is a lack of a -4 armor swing, but then if you're taking a lot of brute throws, spreading Dark Shroud around with, I don't know, an Arlo Seether and something with Scything Touch, then the fact that you're not needing to roll to hit with your power 19 brute throw combo strikes is kind of a damage buff in that regard. But depends how you build the list. As in, the list I've got open on War Room at the moment now actually has bio throws in, which is quite exciting for me because I've not really wanted to build a list with bio throws in for a while. But the bio throws gaining AD with the Scarlet Commander actually gives you some good plays going second, I think, and if your opponent's got the the super fast infantry, the fact you haven't got much in the way of guns isn't really a problem, because if they get too feisty with their infantry, you just purge all over at turn one. And your Biothralls, I think, are possibly in Infernal Machines anyway, they're possibly your second best Mockery of Life target behind your Soul Hunters. Just for the listeners, it's worth pointing out that you can't Mockery of Life back models that have been removed from play from purging, but it will still let you bring back models that have died to blast damage or a few shots that ignore stealth. So potentially something there. Gorshi doesn't really want to spend a lot of his focus on fueling his jets. He's quite happy to cast Mockery, maybe cycle Scythe and Tech. So again, the Iron Leech overseers and there to run his heavies for him seems quite a good fit as well. So I think it might be certainly more interesting for him than Ghost Fleet, with Ghost Fleet being quite a narrow set of models. I've already got a very different Gorshade 3 list to a lot of the Infernal Machines list we've been touting so far. So interesting.
Okay. Well, there's anyway one thing about Gorshade, something that you mentioned. Like, he doesn't have the -4 armor swing with Infernal Machines, but I don't think that he can get it anyway, right? Well, what I mean
no,
is
No,
he has no access to it at all.
No.
So yeah, if you then talk about Seathers and Iron Leech Overseas, Seathers, it's a good way for him to still get a lot of damage out on the table. And then, of course, to shit loads of Brute Trolls.
Yeah, to apply Dark Trade broadly instead of -4 in one place.
It's something worth bearing in mind as well is the Seathers actually have Berserk, which is overlooked quite a lot, but particularly with Gorshade 3, who's bringing a lot of shit you do to fuel the feet. If you can get a mech thrall up next to a target that a Seether is about to attack, you can take his free charge with Crush and Dark Shroud. He takes the two Talon attacks on the heavy. You then take your Tusk attack on the mech thrall, which is only power 12. Kill your own mech thrall and berserk that into a power 21 attack into the heavy, which is actually not a bad option. It's quite a nice little synergy.
You, nice little bit of tech. Magnificent beast.
That is a glorious bit of tech.
That is indeed. That is glorious. Ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here first. Facing the Dragon Father, doing dirty shit since, I don't know, what, a month ago?
Yeah, we're at 2 months now.
2 months ago, sorry.
Bringing Brack. God damn it!
Shall I do this? Shall I do this? I'm gonna do it. Mm. Bringing Crick's Tricks back.
Thank you.
Since, I don't know, February 2017.
Chasing the Dragon Father. The one thing that's better about 2017 than 2016.
Exactly.
Anyway, I think it's a good time to wrap up this episode with us all energized with lots of different list ideas. Last week, when we ran a poll to decide who we dojo in this episode before Infernal Machines took over, we had a tie between Epic Scar and Scavarus. So there is currently a runoff poll being conducted on the Chasing the Dragon Father Facebook page. So you still have time to vote on that runoff to decide who we're going to dojo in the next episode. Yes. In the meantime,
there is a promise that the caster that gets chosen will get dojoed for both Ghost Fleet and Infernal Machines.
Almost certainly.
Yes. It's a promise that I'm making, so I'm going to keep it.
So with that, I've been Anthony, and my co-hosts have been...
I've been Ryan, I'm still Ryan.
Nothing class, and it was a pleasure to do this for you. Rawr.
Pleasure as always, and thank you for listening to another episode of Chasing the Dragon Father. Hopefully the music is queuing in at the correct time this time.